We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number one of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we are glad to have you with us. In this first hour of the show, we're going to take the opportunity to talk about flu. Now, earlier this year, public health officials were warning that this flu season, the one for 2009-2010, could be particularly bad, with people becoming sick with seasonal flu, also possibly the H1N1 flu. Now, some people apparently think we may, and maybe we should underline may, have seen the peak of H1N1, but it is possible that it could later on in the months and weeks ahead make a comeback. And certainly we are weeks away from the typical peak for seasonal flu. So we thought it'd be a good idea to review the basics here, talk a little bit about the symptoms associated with both types of flu, what to do if you or a family member get sick, also reviews the current recommendations for who should be vaccinated. And our guest for the hour is Dr. Thomas Suter. He is a specialist in occupational and environmental medicine at Carl Clinic in Urbana. And all questions are certainly welcome. We just hope people would be brief and know, keep in mind that we can't do diagnosis over the phone. I also try to say that every time we have a physician here on the program. But this is we hope that by doing this program, we can answer basic questions. So again, if you still have questions, any of the things that I mentioned about what flu is, how you can protect yourself, what to do if you're sick, when it's time to see the doctor, any and all of that, I know the doctor will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being here.
Welcome.
We appreciate it. Maybe we could start out talking a little bit about what we know now numbers-wise about the H1N1, and I'm particularly, I guess, I'm interested in this. Now we've been reading some things saying that the officials who track it think that maybe we have seen the peak, and I think I'm sure you want to be careful about saying things like that because you don't want people to get the idea, well, we're done with that, and I don't need to worry about that anymore. What do we know about the numbers of people who have been sick with H1N1?
Yeah, in April is when the first wave came through, and it was a fairly small wave. Started down in Mexico and then the southern part of the United States, eventually spread up here, and we had a small wave there in our local community. Now, this last wave, which peaked about 2 weeks ago here in our community, was what they consider the second wave. Mm-hmm. And I think the question on a lot of people's minds are, what about the third wave? And is the third wave going to peak right in the middle where our typical seasonal flu peaks, which is February approximately? And then maybe we'll have sort of a double wave in that we'll have both the H1N1 and the seasonal flu both peaking at the same time. So I think that's what's sort of on everybody's minds right now.
Mm-hmm.
What we hope in general is that we've been able to vaccinate enough people, or at least some people in our community, such that the H1N1 wave, at least, and hopefully the seasonal wave, will be less than, you know, would have been if we hadn't vaccinated people.
Mm-hmm. Back when we were, I think, first starting to talk about H1N1, and there were people making these projections that it could be very serious, at the same time, I think some of the reporting was trying to remind people that A lot of people get sick from seasonal flu, and in fact, what seems to me to be a fairly significant number of people, I think it was in the tens of thousands every year, actually die from seasonal flu.
Yeah.
So that certainly can be a serious problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's approximately 36,000 people die each year of seasonal flu. So, you know, that in itself is a reason to get vaccinated. But then if you throw on this new one, then you have a double reason to come out and get vaccinated. I think people need to sort of keep in mind that next year, the H1N1's going to probably be in the seasonal vaccine. So, mm-hmm. So it really is a we're kind of separating the terminology here, but it's kind of a seasonal flu too. It's just, it's at the wrong time. I mean, you know, I've been doing this a long time, and when was the last time flu peaked in October and November?
I think everybody was really surprised because we were seeing this flu at a time when you generally hear, you don't.
Right.
You don't see it. We don't have it. In the summertime, people are not supposed to get the flu.
That's right. Well, on the other hemisphere, southern hemisphere.
Oh, okay. We are, yes, that's right. Where we are, you're not supposed to get the flu. Southern hemisphere, it's a different sort of a deal.
So that's when they peak down there. And so it's been interesting. You know, people follow what's going on down there in that hemisphere because it translates what's probably going to happen up here. And so one of the things we've sort of followed is that down there, the H1N1, to some extent, actually chased away the seasonal flu a little bit. And so we're all kind of curious whether that's going to happen up here.
Competing strains of flu, it might actually mean that that other types of flu, these other things that we're referring to as the seasonal flu, we might not see as much of that kind of flu.
That's all we're waiting to see.
But it's just kind of speculation because we really won't know until...
We won't know until it's over. We'll look back at it.
Well, in any case, we certainly would continue... I'm sure you would want to continue to recommend that people are vaccinated. Let me just ask you for a second about H1N1, because when we first started talking about it, there were certain groups of people that where we said, you should be the first ones in line. And that included pregnant women and people who had very young children, and then it was people in certain ages, and then it was people with certain kinds of conditions. Have we now gotten to the point where we've said, well, we're still wanting to get at those people, but we're opening it up and we're saying almost anyone except people in the oldest age groups, we're saying, okay, you want a shot? Come on down. We got a shot for you.
Yeah. Well, in the state of Illinois, our community has been very organized. So the Public Health Department, Carl, Christy, Dr. Blinkus at McKinley, the fire police, emergency, we've all worked together just remarkably well. It's just gone well. We've tried to speak with one voice, tried to all work together. And because of that, and because of a couple other things, partly over the last 2 years, we've all worked together on looking at pandemic preparedness. And we sort of all know each other and have worked together on other projects. So we've actually immunized in our community quite a few of these people that you listed. So we're kind of ahead of the state as a whole as far as having more people immunized against H1N1 than a lot of other places in the state. So that sort of puts us in a dilemma a little bit in that we're ready to move on and open it up totally because we're sort of ahead of the curve, but a lot of places in the state that haven't been as well prepared are not quite ready to do that yet.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So taking guidance from the state, we can't really open it up to people over 64 at this point, although, you know, it's December 3rd. We're ready to do that pretty soon if the state will give us permission to do it.
Now, let's be clear. Is that not because you think that there's some reason that people over 64 shouldn't have the vaccine, but it has to do with how
priority
much vaccine you have and setting up. We're still going back to this thing that says, here's the people should be at the head of the line, and here's the people that can be behind them, and then here's the people that can be behind them.
Yeah. The target groups, the initial target groups, we're still doing that, and it's still prioritized. And I will say, if you look back over the years, we've been doing vaccinations across for a long time, and the last 2 years... we just, you know, in August we get all of our vaccine, we open it up to everybody, everybody comes in, we give the vaccine to everybody, and it's done. And it works so smoothly. It's, you know, it's sort of a big process to get everything organized, to get nurses there. But a couple of years before that, we had something similar to this in that we had to sort of go through priority groups, and we had some lines and those types of things. And it's much harder just to coordinate giving the vaccinations when you have
that. Was that you were talking about that year where we actually had there was a problem with the vaccine, and so there was a shortage. There wasn't
over
enough.
In Europe, there was a shortage, and we didn't get the vaccine, so sort of threw us in disarray. Well, we're, this year it's kind of that again because we've done some of the seasonal, and then they didn't send us the seasonal, and now they sent us some more seasonal. So
okay. Yeah. Well, let's review. Let me ask this question: Who would you say again should be at the head of the list? And if you haven't been vaccinated for H1N1, you would say really, do it.
Pregnant women, healthcare workers, of course, are in that group. Children ages 6 months to 24 years old. And then anyone 24 to 64 that have medical conditions that are of significance. And then people that live with people with a child less than 6 months old. So what you're trying to do is immunize the people all around this child that's less than 6 months old so that they can't give it to the child.
Okay. And then, as you said, in our community, we've gotten enough of those people so that we've actually opened it up to other people as long as you're under 64.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that would be the kind of thing where, depending on where you live at some point, if you're not in one of the priority groups that you talked about, the hope would be eventually that, it will be opened up.
It's still this priority group, but we're taking a fairly wide definition of these age groups.
Let me take one further step, and I know I got a caller here. Then also, we now do have the seasonal flu vaccine. That was the one that, again, in the past, probably lots and lots of people, just lined up and did it. It wasn't there were people who were recommended to get it, but then we also said, it's probably a good idea if you don't want to get sick. So now, are we saying that you should take the opportunity if it's offered to have both?
Absolutely. Actually, we just got another 1,000 doses of seasonal flu vaccine yesterday. So the Carl Arnold Windsor down in South Urbana has both right now. And so there's really quite a few people that didn't get the seasonal flu vaccine also at this point because some of it got delayed because they were producing the other and then they didn't send it to us. And so, please come out and get the seasonal vaccine as well as the H1N1.
All right. We have a caller. We'd welcome others. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Our guest this morning is Dr. Thomas Suter from Carl Clinic in Urbana. We're talking about flu, and any flu questions you might have, give us a call. He'll do his best to give you an answer. Let's go to Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm a longtime subscriber to Consumer Reports on Health, which seems to do a pretty good job of educating the layperson about what's going on in terms of medical stuff. And one of the things that's been a recurring source of articles there is vitamin D, and that it's been being learned that it has many more roles besides bone health, and one of those is immune support for your immune system, and that it's pretty hard to overdose on vitamin D. So about a year ago, I added in addition to my one-a-day vitamin, which I don't remember to take every day, I added 1,000 IUs, a single little capsule of 1,000 IUs of vitamin D, and my husband did as well. And we don't remember to take that every day. But I've been intrigued that in that time I've had, maybe 5 colds, and they've lasted a couple of hours. I begin to get these symptoms. I think, cold starting, and then they would go away. The two of us and my mother, who's also taking more vitamin D, went over Labor Day weekend to visit my son and his family. And on the way, we got a call saying, just giving you a warning, we think the flu has hit us. They weren't sure, but H1N1 was going around. This is out in Denver. We spent half a week, almost a week with that family. All of the family came down with whatever it was. None of the three of us taking more vitamin D did. My husband, when we were visiting other family, came down with what we thought was a sinus infection, and it knocked him flat for about less than 24 hours. he went in to check and make sure it was an H1N1 or to get an antibiotic in case it was a sinus infection, and he was already feeling better. So those are just enough stories. I don't know whether that's actually an indication that the vitamin D was helping us to combat whether we would fall, get colds or the flu. But I'm just wondering why, with the evidence, it seems to be becoming more and more widely accepted that they aren't mentioning that people should be upping their vitamin D intake.
Yeah. I have two comments I can make on that. I think, one, a fairly good site to go to for sort of myths and facts, and they've got all these questions and then the answers to it, is flu.gov. This is a CDC website, sort of a subcategory of their website. And you can go in there, and there's just a lot of questions similar to this that the CDC has responded to. This isn't quite what you asked, but the second part in there that they have on that same site is, do I have the flu? Then you can go in and you can sign in and they'll ask you some questions. Then it will tell you whether you have the flu or not. I mean, there's a disclaimer at the beginning of the whole thing, but, and then finally, the other comment I have about this is, my daughter had, H1N1. She's 15. She was totally fine, and about 3 hours later, she was fairly severely ill. She had just classic symptoms of cough, sore throat, you know, aches, fever, chills, and she actually had a little vomiting, which typically doesn't go with a respiratory illness, but with this H1N1 seems to have... and a new symptom added on. Anyway, and then 3 days later, she was better and fine running around. But my point is, I guess, that my wife and I both were taking close care of our daughter, and my wife stayed up with her all night, and we were around her with her coughing on us, and we didn't get the flu. Well, I don't know if it's because I'm old, and, you know, there's some thought that those of us that are older got some protection, but... that's sort of what happened. You know, as far as the vitamin D itself, I can't answer that. I'm not an expert in that area, but, I've heard similar thoughts.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Just before talking maybe a little bit more, whatever you might say about prevention, I just do want to take one step back and maybe ask one more vaccination question, because I would expect maybe as we go along here that some people might say, well, if I haven't been vaccinated yet, is there some point at which it's too late? Or, you know, if next week or the week after that or the day before Christmas or New Year's, is there some point at which it's too late? Or you would say, no, do it as soon as you can do it, do it.
No, I would say continue to do it. It's important to be vaccinated. Like I say, it usually peaks in February or March. So anytime 2 weeks prior to that, you can still get it because it takes about 2 weeks to build up your immunity. So I say come on out and get the vaccination. There's some talk about whether people that they think they had the H1N1 should be then vaccinated, and the guidance to us from CDC is yes, you should, with a very few exceptions of if you've been confirmed by a swab test, not the one that you do in the doctor's office, but the one that's sent off to the state. If you have that confirmation at that level, you don't have to come out and get an H1N1 vaccination, but everybody else should.
Are the symptoms of what we call seasonal flu and H1N1 substantially different?
No, they're exactly the same, except the other curveball that's been thrown with us this year is the fact that we're seeing some vomiting and occasional diarrhea with this flu. Well, that's just we don't know what to do with it. That's mm-hmm. not what classical flu is. Classical flu is a respiratory flu. And in fact, you know, people, you know, often would say, oh, I had the flu, but they really mean gastroenteritis. And we try to clarify over the last 10 years, say, oh, that's not really the flu. The real flu is a respiratory cough. Well, now what do we do? Because here we are with, you know, clearly a respiratory flu that indeed has vomiting and diarrhea occasionally. And so we're just sort of playing it by ear here.
All right. Well, we have some other folks with questions. And the next is in Urbana, and that's somebody on line number two. Hello.
Doctor, please unconfuse me. I'm a 56-year-old male, live alone, otherwise in very good health. What would you recommend? What I've been able to gather so far, I'm not at high risk of H1N1, but I should get a seasonal flu shot. Is that what you would say?
Yes, you should. And as soon as the state opens it up to the H1N1, you should get that too.
Okay. But am I wrong in thinking I'm at somewhat lower risk due to my age of H1N1, or is that a mistake?
The data isn't conclusive on that, but there's been some anecdotal evidence that those of us that are more mature might mm-hmm. have a little protection.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You say Carl has the flu. How about Christy? Do you know?
You know, I don't know.
The flu population.
You need to call them. I don't want to
That's
say
That's the
for
other
sure.
problem I've had, too, is that there seems to be just a shortage of the stuff, and I've been... Because I live alone and don't have a lot of contact with humans and so forth and keep away from children and things, that I've been thinking, well, I'm at fairly low risk just by my isolation, and as soon as I can conveniently and without bumping anybody else in line, I'll come and get a flu shot. But you think I should do so as soon as possible anyway?
Certainly the seasonal you should go ahead and get at this point, H1N1 as soon as you can. I know the public health department also has the H1N1.
Okay.
So there's different places to get that.
All right. Thank you for the call. Let us go on here next to line number one, and I believe that is also someone in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Line one?
Yes.
My question is similar to the last one. I'm definitely going to get the seasonal flu vaccination, but I was hoping to get the H1N1 at the same time. I'm 54 years old, and they talk about this compromised status that you might need to go ahead and qualify now. I get sinus infections every this time of year, and I have had exercise attacks, asthma attacks, but I don't have full-blown asthma. And I just don't know if that qualifies me for that higher risk area or not.
Yeah, I think that would qualify you. I would say go on in and get it. We're not turning people away that, you know, we're not police in the sense that we're checking. If people tell us they have medical conditions, then of course they will get it and receive the vaccine.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. One thing that just in terms of an informational resource that I'd like to direct people to is if you go to our website, that will.illinois.edu, willl.illinois.edu. We have a section there where we have some information on flu, and it's a kind of a project where we're working together with the local public health district. So there's information there available. There's, for example, there's a map of the state of Illinois that shows where your nearest public health department is. There is a current message there that we're continuing to update with Julie Pride, who is head of the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. I think that also would be another way to find out. And if you link there to their site, that would be another way to find out when they're doing immunizations, because that's with public health, it's a come one, come all. And so maybe that would make it easier for someone who's not, you know, depending on where they get their health care, they're not sure, are they offering shots, where they're doing it, when they're doing it. This would be an opportunity. I know just a couple of weeks ago, I took advantage of the fact that public health was doing H1N1. They were doing it over in Urbana and Lincoln Square. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, we just went over, and it was amazingly well-run, very smooth kind of operation. I think we were in and out in about 10 minutes, and it was a great thing. So, and then that's something that anybody in the community can can take advantage of. And so check our website, and then that way you can find out more about what public health is doing here in our community.
Yeah, it's been great working with Julie Pride this year. She's just been a real leader in this, and the health department has worked well with us at Carl and Christy and Praveen and the different areas. It's been fun work with her. Again, she's been a real leader.
Okay. Let's, again, talk with another caller, and next will be someone in Savoy, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I am a 79-year-old woman who about 4 years ago had a seasonal flu injection and reacted to it. At the time, I knew the company, but I don't anymore, but I had told them, you know, on their website what had happened. I called my physician, but they had no records of it. And I did get the injection, you know, at a local hospital, and but I ended up getting hives and ended up needing steroids to combat the reaction. I'm not sure what I should do at this point, if anything.
Yeah.
I've been counting on herd immunity, and it seems to work.
Good for you. And that's a real good point, and that's why we're working as a community to get everybody immunized, because the herd immunity effect is important. So if we can get, you know, 80-90% of our community immunized, then it'll be a lot better for everybody else. Specifically for you, if you actually had hives and went to that level, then there must have been something that was a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, you can talk to your doctor specifically what he wants to do. Typically, they just in general, someone like that, they would, if you have symptoms, you'd talk to your doctor, and he might start an antiviral such as Tamiflu, since you couldn't have been immunized. So maybe he would have started a little bit sooner than he would someone else, just because he knows that you couldn't be immunized.
Okay.
But again, work with your local doctor on that. The other things that occasionally, now this is just immunizations and as a whole, not necessarily just you specifically, but occasionally if you have a reaction to an immunization, a vaccine of some sort, occasionally physicians will allow you to come in, get a half a dose, wait in their waiting room or wait in their office for half an hour. They check you and see whether or not you're reacting to it. And then if you're not, over a period of time, then they'll give you the other half of the dose, and then you'll be, you know, they'll realize that, you know, you can actually be there,
yeah.
Whether you're having a problem or not.
Well, we haven't gone that far yet, but because I've been well all these other years. So. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you. And we'll go to another caller here, and this would be in Urbana, line 1. Hello.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes.
I had heard or read earlier this year about, you know, the problem with follow-on infections after the flu, and that was often a big problem, and that there was actually a vaccine that they were recommending for especially young children. And I'm just wondering, is that still part of the overall strategy, not only the flu shots, but other shots to take care of the secondary infections?
I think the doctor's just is not. We want to be clear on what the question you're asking is. That there is concern that after having the flu, there might be some further things that someone would get that you want to be concerned about.
Yeah, yes, the secondary infections. I understand that was often the caused half the mortality. And,
right.
Okay. No. Good. Well, we just wanted to make sure we got you. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, this virus seems to be penetrating a little bit further down into the lung than some of the other flu things and viruses we've seen, and by doing that, it actually kind of wipes out some of the epithelial lining down in the lung there, and so the tissue is not really the way the tissue is supposed to be. And then if you get a secondary bacterial infection on top of that, that's really often fairly lethal. And, boy, that's when the point where you better be seeing your physician and getting taken care of. Yeah, very good point. It's often those secondary bacterial infections that then cause the mortality.
Yeah, I guess I'd read, I think it was back in March, that there was actually a vaccine they were recommending, you know, on a preventative basis, especially for young children. But I wasn't, that was some time ago, I wasn't sure if that was still part of the strategy or what people were, how they were trying to combat that.
You're probably referring to pneumococcal vaccination, and most people get that now anyway. You know, it's in the schedule now of vaccinations, and we have always given it to people 65 and older. But the sort of the expansion of being able to give that vaccination has increased over the last several years. The one thing with that vaccination, the pneumococcal vaccination, it's only good for certain types of pneumococcal vaccine. So there's, I forget exactly, but maybe there's six of the 12 strains that it covers. So you still could, but it helps. So, yeah, that's a good point.
Okay.
You should
get. Right. So that's part of the strategy there.
Yes.
Okay.
No,
thank you.
So just to be clear now, and indeed, this is a vaccine for pneumonia, and it seemed that at least the last that I heard was that it was something that was really targeted at seniors, so
yeah, but,
above a certain age. Right now, you're expanding that to...
Well, there's a new one that also children can get, and that's just in the last few years.
Oh, okay.
And so so they've sort of expanded who gets that. And so there's been not... We haven't... actually heard a lot talked about, but yes, you know, that's out there.
And is that the thought there that one shot in childhood is going to give you lifelong immunity?
I believe there's a boost. You have to get a booster, but you know, I'm not 100%.
Okay. Sure, well, that's the kind of thing people can talk about with their...
More the pediatricians sort of deal with that more than I do, I guess.
All right. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Thomas Suter. He's a specialist in occupational environmental medicine. He works at Carl Clinic in Urbana, and we're talking about flu. And we thought it would be a good opportunity to do a general program about flu, talk a little bit about what it is, what are the symptoms, what to look for, what you can do in terms of prevention, talk about vaccinations, and questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. I've got some other callers here, but was there anything, you know, an earlier caller was talking about, well, would it be that certain vitamins, maybe, if you had a little bit more vitamin D, maybe that might improve your immune system functioning. And I'm sure you would want to say, well, you want to make sure that people, you know, follow good basic, they have good and basic nutrition, they get plenty of sleep, that, you know, things like that, the general stuff. Is there anything else that you think is worth recommending in terms of prevention, things that somebody might do to try to, you know, lessen the chances that they might get sick?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about wearing masks or not wearing masks. There's been a lot of talk about washing your hands and those types of things. I noticed you had a sign out here with a little pump bottle that you could use
yeah.
When I walked in the station here.
Yeah.
So that's great. You know, at Carl, we got a big kiosk that says stop. You know, here's a pump to wash your hands with before you come into our facility. And here's some masks to put on if you're coughing or feel you had a fever or anyway sick. So, yeah, there's been a whole lot of talk about that. Certainly just taking care of yourself, eating well, sleeping well. If you have a fever, you shouldn't be, you know, going to work and going out and spreading it to other people. And that's not just with the flu. That's just in general.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk with some other folks. And next should be, I think, Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 58, and I am allergic to egg yolks. Is it true that I couldn't get the shot? And is there another way that I can get it other than, you know, inoculation in the arm?
No, you're right. If you're allergic to egg, that's a problem. Did you have the full urticaria with hives and shortness of breath when your reaction to the eggs?
No, it's more like swelling.
Okay, but swelling of your throat?
Uh-huh, and around the side of my throat, swelling, and
yeah.
Then I get flu-like symptoms.
Yeah, well, then you can. So then your doctor would just monitor you closely. If you started having symptoms, then he would probably start treating you with the antiviral Tamiflu sooner than he would someone else.
Oh, okay.
Okay, then the other thing that you can do is make sure that everybody you know gets the flu shot.
Well, yeah, surround
yourself. Everybody
you.
That you know that well, can get it. Yeah, that's the, surround yourself with people who've been vaccinated, and you'll be fine.
Well, and then people...
thank you.
Yeah.
I'm sort of joking, but what this where it goes back to an earlier caller used the term herd immunity, and that's really what we're talking about is that in a group of people, the more people in the group that you could get vaccinated, then you're cutting down the chances of people getting sick and then passing it around. So truly. If everybody got vaccinated and those people that were allergic to egg couldn't get vaccinated, well, maybe if we could vaccinate everybody else, then those people should pretty much be okay.
Yeah, and then the same goes for the children 0 to 6 months that we don't vaccinate. Right. And it's exactly the same idea. You know, just vaccination in general, you know, they really changed the course of our history and in the world, just what happens. And some vaccines, of course, give you immunity for life, so that maybe measles or something like that, a vaccination. But the influenza virus, just because of the way it is and the way it mutates and the fact it's an RNA virus, we have to get a new vaccine each year. Between that and the fact that the CDC puts different strains in the vaccine each year, makes us have to get one each year.
Yeah, okay. Next, we'll talk with someone in Champaign. Line one, hello.
Hi, I have two questions. One is about the pneumonia shot. I had it this year for the first time at my annual physical in August because I had turned 65 the year before. And I had not an allergic reaction, but my arm got so painful I couldn't even lift it for about a day. So, A, is that usual, and B, do I have to get that every year?
Very common, and no, you don't have to get it every year.
Okay, how often, or ever again?
No, at 65, I don't think you need to get a booster. You should be fine.
Okay, and then the other question is about H1N1. I had heard somewhere that the Hong Kong flu is what gives people over 50 a certain immunity. Is that... Did I hear that right?
There's been some anecdotal thoughts that people over 65 or even maybe a little younger have some protection, but there's just not been an absolute, you know, it's not, no one's come out and absolutely said that's true. It's mostly stories that people say.
Stories what?
Just mostly by what people say around the world, they've sort of sensed that that's true, but they actually haven't done a study to show that it's been true.
All right, because I'm pretty sure I had it in 1968.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that people don't know is that the H1, there's another H1N1. This one's called the novel H1N1. Mm-hmm. But actually in the seasonal flu this year, there's an H1N1 strain in there. And then there's another a strain of a influenza A, and then there's a B influenza. There's always three in the shot each year. And so, and then next year, I would be real sure that the novel H1, which is this new one, will be in the vaccine.
Well, I've gotten the seasonal flu shot, but you think I should still get the H1N1?
Oh, absolutely.
All right, thanks very much.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
And let's see, we'll go to Champaign County for the next call here, line three. Hello. Yes.
I'm 58 years old, and in October I got the seasonal flu shot, and I've been getting seasonal flu shots ever since they've been available for 30 years or more, and I've never had a problem with them before. But this year I had a reaction to it, and a little bit different than some of the people are talking, but I was within 2 hours of the shot, I had a fever of 101, lots of aches, lots of pains. I felt, you know, really sick, just like I would have if I had the flu, was that kind of a reaction. And then the symptoms, every one of them just ended abruptly, almost within 15 minutes, at about the 36-hour level. What I was wondering is, if I've had this, does this put me now at a higher risk for reaction to the H1N shot or any of the other seasonal flu shots for that matter this year? And maybe would it be an auger for a worse reaction the next time?
No, I don't think so. The official reading on something like that is that the seasonal flu vaccine that you received is a killed vaccine.
Right.
So if you would ask the experts, they would say you can't get the flu from the flu vaccine because it's a killed vaccine. So can someone get sick the next day because they're ready to get sick and then they got the vaccine right the day before? That's how they would say respond probably to this type of scenario. Whether that's true or not, you know, people sometimes say that, no, they're really sure that the two are linked. But on the official websites, if you look, they'll say no. And as far as having another reaction next time, no, I don't think you should. I mean, again, if it's a killed vaccine, it really should not be giving you a systemic reaction like that. Now, the local reaction on the arm and stuff, that's pretty common.
Since this happened within 2 hours of getting the shot, I should just consider it a coincidence then?
That's what the official websites would say.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks. I hear just a little skepticism there. And I guess I'm glad we got to this because it's the kind of question that comes up, I'm sure, again and again. People say, well, can I get sick from getting the shot? And always what doctors will say, the thing that you did, he'd say, no, this is not a live virus you're getting. It's a killed virus. You cannot, underline, cannot get the flu from getting the flu shot. And yet, you know, we do have people like this caller, and I've met people who said, oh, you know, and that's kind of their reason for it. If they say, I don't want to get it, they'll say, well, you know, last time I got the shot and I got sick afterwards. So what you're saying is, well, you know, yeah, you got sick, but all the doctors would say wasn't because of the flu shot.
Very common response. We hear it quite a bit, too. And, yeah, it's a killed vaccine. We're told that can't happen.
Now, let me just, though, ask you about the nasal spray version of the vaccine that some people get. We're talking about a different thing now.
That's a live virus, but it's attenuated. And by attenuated, we mean its virulence or its power is lower. So you also can't get, I will almost go on the limb and say you can't go on and get flu from the live one either, although I think the one study showed a chance of 0.06, very low, and only if you have very close contact with someone. That would be like kissing someone or being in very close contact. So more or less, you can't even get it with a live one because it's attenuated.
Uh-huh. And you can't, and then having had the, is there not some concern, though, that if you got the nasal mist version, that you should be careful if there's any possibility that you might expose yourself to someone who has a compromised immune system? Could you then give something to them that way?
Well, that's a good question. It's certainly someone like with a bone marrow transplant, you can't get it and then go in with them. But anybody else, they're not saying that you should take care. Again, it's very close contact. It's almost zero chance of doing it. The last number I saw was a chance of 0.6.
Okay. What is the only reason that you would give that to somebody? It was just somebody who doesn't want to have to get stuck? I mean, is there a particular reason why that version, you would do that version as opposed to a different one? And there are some people where it's contraindicated, so you'd say, well, you wouldn't give it to them.
You've got to be between 2 and 49, 2 years old and 49, and you got to be healthy. And that's sort of the big thing. So it's great for school-age kids and, well, just kids in general. And quite frankly, with the first to sort of come out each year is the nasal right now. So the first we received of both H1N1 and the seasonal this year was the nasal. And so it limits a little bit because we can only give it 2 to 49. But on the other hand, it's an opportunity for those people. The other sort of issue is in the old days, I don't know if you remember this or not, but flu was just for people over 65. We didn't talk about kids or family or anything like that. I mean, this wasn't very long ago, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And now we know that that's not true. We know that we need to get to the children, the school kids. There's some thought that maybe they're the reservoir to some extent, and if we can get to them, maybe actually we'll see more progress with keeping people healthy.
Okay. We have a couple more callers, so we'll try to get them both. Next, someone in White Heath. Line one, hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I'm just calling to see. I haven't had either shot yet. Can I have them both on the same day then?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, good. I'm glad the caller asked the question. So no problem with if you can get them both right at the same time, no problem.
Well, there's the only exception, you obviously can't get both the nasal. You can't get the H1N1 nasal and the H1N1 seasonal, both nasal at the same time because you're squirming both in the nose. So those you have to be about a month apart.
So if you do it, if you're getting it by injection.
Really, but in the injection.
No problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Champagne, next line two. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
I've got a question. I want to know if I can go to my doctor and have him give me a flu shot, a seasonal flu shot, instead of having to stand in line. I have a lot of back pain, and I really don't feel like standing in line.
You'll have to call your doctor's nurse and ask them if they have any in at this point.
Oh.
In the Carl system, we do. But you should still check.
I will.
But most of our offices have it in their offices. But we're encouraging people to go to the Windsor Carl on Windsor in South Urbana because it's set up just to do the vaccination. And there are some days where there's a little line, but most days they're getting through pretty quick.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. One thing, another thing that I wanted to make sure that I asked was if you have somebody in your family, somebody in your family is sick, and you're pretty sure that it is flu, when do you go to the doctor? And when do you say, okay, well we can take care of the symptoms, and probably in a little while you'll be better?
It depends somewhat on the age groups. So if it's a young child, if they become lethargic, or if they start to get cyanotic or blue, or they don't feed well, and some of those types of things. This is actually very similar to if they get sick otherwise. Mm. You know, at that point, you would sort of decide, oh, well, I think now it's time to go to the doctor and see what's going on. With an older person, if they actually start to get pretty short of breath or chest pain or some other symptoms, respiratory, then you'd want to go pretty quickly.
And one thing I was kind of thinking about, we just have a story here apparently within the last day or two, a girl here in our area died. And initially, I guess the idea was it might have been flu. And now apparently the determination was she actually had a meningitis type of infection, a bacterial infection, so that it wasn't the flu. But that just makes me think, well, I wonder, are there other things that can look like flu? Are there other things that where the symptoms would be the same, but maybe indeed where you would say potentially this is more serious than having the flu? So I guess I just wonder, are there certain things, certain symptoms particularly that you would say, well, really pay attention if you see this is going on, that you really it would be good to have a consultation just to make sure that it's not something that would be potentially even more serious than flu.
Yeah, a lot of these are very similar. So, you know, some of the aches and fevers and sort of the general symptoms are all the same, whether it's another upper respiratory symptoms, even strep throat sometimes. Gives you a variety of things, and certainly meningitis. You think of headaches and neck pain, but doesn't necessarily have to present that way. The thing with all this is sometimes people get the flu and don't have any symptoms at all. Sometimes they have this in-between mild symptoms, and then we're seeing some with extremely severe symptoms. So If you have any questions, you just need to run it by your primary care doctor.
Okay. One more caller at least. Bloomington, Illinois. Line one. Hello.
Hi. I am expecting a baby in about a month, and me and my husband and my kids have all gotten vaccinated with the H1N1 vaccine. Certain members of my family, including my mother, have refused to get the vaccine because they are skeptical about the safety of it. Do you think it's prudent for me to limit the exposure to the newborn throughout the flu season for folks who have not gotten the vaccine?
You should see the look on the doctor's face. Yeah.
That's your decision. That's a tough one. That's a tough one.
My husband thinks I'm overreacting, but I don't know. I'm trying to convince her to get it before.
Yeah. The CDC recommendation is for people surrounding an infant 0 to 6 months should be immunized. So that's the official recommendation. So what you do with that, you have to decide. But
do you have any strong arguments for people who are skeptical about the safety of the vaccine at this point to convince
them? Yeah, they've given millions and millions of doses, and and we haven't seen any of the bad things. The other argument is that it's made the same way the seasonal vaccine is made. So we didn't. Mm-hmm. This isn't some new processor. You know, the same companies that make the regular vaccine are doing it the same way. So
if your mom has ever gotten a flu shot, she's gotten a flu shot before. This shouldn't be any different.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay. Well, I think that's about the point we're going to have to stop. Any last thing that you'd like to mention?
No, I just think prevention is important, and come out. Community immunity is sort of the theme for Champaign-Urbana, and Julie Pryde has been pushing that, and we just want to get everybody immunized in Champaign-Urbana, and so come on out and get your vaccination.
And again, if you a good source of flu information, go to our website. It's will.illinois.edu. There's a big window on there you'll see on our main page. It says H1N1 Flu Advisory. Click on that. There's information there, and there's a link to the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, so get more information from them. Our guest, Dr. Thomas Suter from Carl Clinic in Urbana. Thanks very much for being here.